And he said that he's been doing it every year. Doing this every year, just another appropriation.
Good afternoon. We're going to call this meeting of the State Department Veterans Budget Division to order. It's about 8 minutes after four on Wednesday, February 4th, and a quorum is present. Today, members, we have seven presentations. You see them listed in on our agenda, and right behind that, of course, are the change the changes the governor made in the existing budget. So you'll have that for your reference. But we're going to start right off with a presentation by the MMB, Commissioner Franz, and Michelle Weber. Look forward to hearing from you. And I'll turn it over to you, Commissioner Franz.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I know you have a full agenda, so what I'd like to do is just give you a one-minute overview, the highlights, and jump right into the change items. You probably have in front of you a sheet that has a Minnesota Management Budget right at the top. Exactly, and that's what I'll be working off of. The primary concern that we wanted to address today was the governor's proposed change items regarding the Minnesota Management Budget. As you know, we are our mission at MMB is to manage state government, the financial, the workforce, and the information resources in order to make sure that we support an effective and efficient state government service for Minnesotans. You'll see at the top or in the middle there by the number of employees we have, the number of agencies we serve, the number of labor agreements, and the payments that we make each month. This highlights, I think, the breadth of the services that Minnesota Management and Budget provides throughout the enterprise. At the bottom of the page where you see budget at a glance, you can see that the largest portion of the budget for MMB relates to the state employee group insurance plan. Down at the bottom, about 95% of the annual budget for MMB relates to the contributions made by employees and their families for health insurance. At the top, you see the other 5% is allocated between the debt service for the SWIFT enhanced system that Ms. Weber will be talking about in just a moment. We have another $34 million in other funds that we allocate across the business systems and enterprise activities where we bill some of the other agencies for our activities and services. And finally, you see that we have a $41 million general fund appropriation. These operate the MMB core agency activities, including accounting, budgeting, economic analysis, debt management, enterprise, human resources, labor relations, and management services. And so if we'll turn to the next page, we can show you the how that 5% is allocated. The first page shows you the 100% of the biannual budget. The second page shows how that is broken down into the different activities for MMB. At the top of the page, those are from the fiscal year 13 actual numbers. And then I think if we turn to the third page, we can get to the actual budget changes if there are no questions before we jump into the changes. Let me jump into then on page three. I'm going to ask Ms. Michelle Weber, she's the director of our Enterprise Resource Planning, to describe the first change item.
Ms. Weber, would you identify yourself before you start?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Members of the committee, my name is Michelle Weber, and I'm the Enterprise Resource Planning Director at Minnesota Management and Budget. The Maintain Enterprise Systems change item that the governor is proposing includes funding to MMB in the amount of $2 million in fiscal year 16, and then beginning in fiscal year 17 and beyond, it's $4 million ongoing. The purpose of these funds will be used to support upgrades to our current enterprise-wide systems, which include the statewide accounting system, the state human resource system, including payroll functions, as well as human resource management, our employment application system, our training system, as well as our budget systems. The dollars will be used in the first biennium for the purposes of upgrading our accounting system, SWIFT, as well as the Enterprise Learning Management System. In fiscal year 2018, we'll be replacing critical hardware. The purpose of this is to be in compliance with new versions of the software that will no longer be supported beginning in 2017.
And with that, I'd like to move on to the second item, enhancing the enterprise level services, which is a $2 million item. What we would like to do in this change item is provide a uniform guidance to state agencies on the Veterans Preference Act. One of the things we found is that agencies have a need for support to make sure that we maintain a consistent and fair process for any concerns under the Veterans Preference Act that might arise in an agency. We also want to be able to utilize data that can help us improve our processes as best we can. We want to help agencies plan on succession planning for process so that then as the knowledge base begins retiring in the near future with the aging population, that we can help assist agencies in that planning process. We also want to develop expertise in accessibility to make sure that all of our programs and information are fully accessible to all individuals. We want to enhance affirmative action programs with a focus on diversity and inclusion throughout the entire enterprise of state government. And we want to make sure that we communicate more effectively within state government about the priorities that we have to provide service, quality services to all Minnesotans. The next item is an operating adjustment of $866,000. This would help us maintain the current level of service. We would use this as an approximate 1.8% increase to our base funding for compensation costs. This is reflecting some of the changes in labor contract settlements, insurance, and other items of employee compensation that have changed over the last several years. And by making this adjustment, we hope reduce and eliminate the need for any additional staff reductions. We have two non-operating items I'd like to bring to your attention. The first one is the opportunity to expand the operating budget carry-forward authority. That's $7.5 million for the biennium. This would allow agencies to more uniformly carry forward unexpended non-grant operating appropriations at the end of the biennium. It would allow for more consistent treatment of state agency budgets by providing the same flexibility that some other agencies have at this point, and would also help with certain selective appropriations that have this carry-forward authority. This would reduce the need to forecast MMB forecast the need for canceling certain appropriations to the general fund. It would increase the agency's flexibility to manage costs within generally accepted accounting expenses and practices. We would also provide an incentive to identify any efficiencies and cost savings in this process. But more importantly, it really remove the use it or lose it mentality that might exist at the end of a biennium and make sure people spend money effectively and efficiently, consistent with the appropriation from the legislature. And the last item I want to mention is a rather smaller item, and that's another non-operating tort claim appropriation. This would be a $600,000 change to the MMB non-operating budget, but it's an overall $0 effect because this would be transferred to the Minnesota Department of Transportation Director. They are currently managing these tort claims. They're managing the claims, and we would also ask that they be able to pay those claims to reduce the need to have MMB as an intermediary in those payments. So we're ready for any questions the committee might have.
Commissioner Franz, in terms of the $2 million appropriation to maintain the enterprise systems, I guess at some point, certainly don't have to do it today, but like to see some little more of a breakout as to where that money's going to spread out. We understand it's a number of systems. And could you tell me how many FTEs we're talking about with that $2 million appropriation? If you don't have that information right on, you can bring that later too. But
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this initiative would be done in partnership with Minute Services. The dollars are primarily for bringing in consultants to work with us on the upgrades to the SWIFT and Enterprise Learning Management System in the first biennium. And in the out years, a portion of the dollars would be used for hardware replacement also. There are no ongoing or one-time FTEs associated with this change item.
Thank you. Other questions? I guess you answered them all. We'll look forward to talking to you later, but thank you very much for a concise report.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you.
Next, Department of Revenue. Commissioner Arley, welcome.
Thank you.
And also we have Ryan Church, Deputy Commissioner, and Terry Steenblock, Assistant Commissioner, and Pete Scarwaz. There he is. Okay, good. All four of you up there, and I'm just going to turn it over to you, Commissioner, and go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. In the interest of time, I'm going to just do a very brief introduction, and this is my first time before you. Thank you for hearing us today and giving us some time to talk about the important work that we do at the Department of Revenue, and then I will turn it over to the rest of our management team to give you the details of our change items. The Department of Revenue does three things.
Excuse me, Commissioner, just for the tape, could you again tell us?
Yes, I apologize.
Recognize yourself.
Cynthia Bowerly, Commissioner of Department of Revenue.
Thank you.
Customers deserve from the Department of Revenue a vigilant and vigorous protection of their personal information, education, and outreach to be able to file their taxes right the first time, and enforcement to ensure a fair tax system. And to do that, the Department of Revenue relies on two main resources. One are people, and the other is technology. And so that's really what our change items today before you focus on, and I will we'll be happy to provide you with any information and answer any questions that you have, but you have a very busy agenda today, and so I'm going to step aside and let others get into the detail of the change items.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yep, Ryan Church, Deputy Commissioner at Revenue. And thank you for the opportunity to just give you a brief overview of the agency and highlight the governor's budget recommendations for the department. We have a simple little one-pager that lays out a little bit about who we are and also lays out the budget items on the back page, and so we'll get to that as I see you've got a number of things to handle today. Before we jump into the one-pager, I would just want to set a little context up front, and that would be that basically over the last few years, the Department of Revenue has seen a significant increase in the demand for customer services. So that's number of phone calls that come into our call centers. It would be the number of outreach activities that we do within the community, whether that's military families trying to understand what their credits could be, or dealing with people who are new to Minnesota, the immigrant community that might be going through this for the first time. A lot of efforts just to make sure that they have the information that they need to properly file. Even the number of tax types that are now filed electronically has grown significantly over the last several years, and certainly there's a growing appetite for that. So meeting these kinds of demands is important because this is what helps taxpayers voluntarily file their taxes. And by the way, the vast majority of Minnesotans do. It's also, I think, fair to say that the Department of Revenue has been pretty effective in responding to those new demands. Whether it's, really leveraging technology, which is an incredibly important part of how we operate today, or making other improvements in technology, focusing on our highest priorities, and that has been an important part of how we have dealt with those increased demands. There's great success stories there, and frankly, our employees are quite proud of their accomplishments. But we wouldn't be telling you the whole story if we didn't acknowledge that those increased demands combined with increased costs in a number of areas within our business has resulted in a reduction in our overall capacity to respond to future needs. So as we look down the road, as we look at the next biennium, we really see the simple fact that unless we make targeted investments in these key areas to make sure that our customers are well served, we're going to see reductions in our basic service levels. We just want to make sure that you had that story up front, and then we'll get into the presentation about that. I should also just point out that we are down about 200 FTEs from about 3 years ago, and we don't expect to get back to that. That point in time is gone, but we're going to try to make very specific and focused investments in these key areas of customer service. Just very quickly, the one-pager, what I would just highlight is that we really touch on our values there, our mission, which is bannered across the center of that state, working together to fund Minnesota's future. Of course, many, many people are involved in that work, whether it's individual taxpayers, tax professionals, local government, other state agencies, business community, lots of people involved in that. Revenue's key part is just to make sure that we've got the people, the know-how, and the systems to support the overall administration of that system. Lastly, the vision statement, which is that little green line across the middle. Everyone reports, pays, and receives the right amount, no more, no less. And I hope you see that we're striking a balance there. Not only are we looking at making sure that people report and pay, but we also want to make sure that people are getting those credits and those refunds to which they're entitled. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Terry Steenblok, who'll just touch on a couple of our results.
Black.
Mr. Welcome. Chair, thank you. Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Terry Steenblok, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Individual Taxes. In the essence of time, I'm just going to highlight three of the results that are shown on the front page under the 2014 results section. I want to talk briefly about the customer service element of it. For our agency, customer service comes in the form of walk-in, call-in, and click-in. You'll notice on this document we indicate that we served 750,000 customers last year. The year before that, we served just over 600,000 customers, and this year we are on pace to reach over 850,000 customer contacts within the agency. If you look at the sixth bullet, I want to point out that we are more than just an agency that collects revenue. We are also an agency that prepares revenue analysis. Those are bipartisan, nonpartisan revenue analysis to the executive and the legislative branch of government. Our research team produced 950 of those last year, and that is up from a total of 650 prior to that. Finally, I want to just highlight the seventh bullet under the results section. Not only do we assist 3,420 local units of government, but we collect debt for all state agencies and areas of government, such as municipal ambulance services, and we generate about $8 million in additional revenue for the general fund. So, again, in the essence of time, I just wanted to highlight a couple things that demonstrate the increased demand from our customers, and I will turn it over to our Assistant Commissioner of Administration, Pete Squira, who will go over our change items.
Thank you, Commissioner. Is there any questions of either of the first two testifiers? I didn't ask. All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Squira.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Pete Squira. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Administration in the Department of Revenue. I'm going to share with you today our change items that are proposed in the governor's budget. So if you turn your sheet to the back side, you'll see the first one is respond to customers' demands and deliver excellent services. There are two aspects to this, and the first one is focused around our current employees. Revenue's largest investment is our people. Over 70% of the budget is people costs, and revenue staff are educated, trained, highly skilled, and stewards of Minnesota resources. We are asking for your support in retaining our human capital, who is responsible for delivering excellent customer services and fairly administering the tax system. The other part is has to do with increasing demands for services. They're coupled with increasing costs, which have given us the opportunity for changes in our operations. We've both made efficiencies and we've prioritized our work. We've implemented e-services for a number of tax types. We have used plain language to rewrite letters and forms so that customers better understand the content of those letters and any follow-up actions needed. Through the governor's uncession, we have reduced the number of forms and payment vouchers. This has created efficiencies in customers knowing exactly which forms to file and payment vouchers to use. And we've analyzed our resources purchased and scaled them based on the need of operation. However, the increased demand and increased costs have also resulted in reduced capacity. It's diminished our customer service support. It's caused a delay in our processing time of returns. And it's given us a limited ability to collect debt on the behalf of state and other state governments or state agencies. These two proposals will retain current staffing levels, maintain and enhance critical technology systems, continue to purchase essential services, and meet increasing customer service demands. And as Ryan mentioned earlier, this level of funding does not restore operations to historical levels, but rather ensures we do not lose ground on our most critical functions. Moving on to the second change item, it is stop tobacco smuggling. Smuggling of cigarettes and other tobacco products in the state has substantially increased. In 2014, 40% of inspections, retail inspections, resulted in either seizure or assessment related to the discovery of untaxed tobacco products. In these inspections, revenue uncovered increasing evidence of tax evasion. This proposal will enhance enforcement personnel, increase penalties on those who do not pay tax. It will create a statewide license for retailers to ensure that honest businesses are not at a competitive disadvantage, and will raise revenue from licenses, fines, and tax collection. The last one on your page.
Chairman.
We have Senator Metzen.
Yeah,
has
just
a question.
We're spending about $2.5 million to get these bad guys and gals that are smuggling, and that's good, I guess, but there's probably no way to estimate how much you would get in return for that. In other words, if you get these bad guys, then the receipt should be up in our state, because we're spending a lot of money to get these people, 11, and you need about 11 people, I think. And I'm just kind of curious, if you spend $2.5 million, Mr. Chairman, it would be the kind of the return on investment, so to speak. Maybe those are hard numbers. I don't know how you'd figure that out.
You want to respond, Commissioner? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, we do have a revenue target that's been put in our change item of $4 million for the biennium. So the average spend on this initiative is about $1 million going out into the tail years, and that revenue is continued at $2 million per year. We used our fines, our licensure dollars, and also our assessments, our assessed tax of uncollected tax, and also some voluntary compliance estimates within that $2 million revenue estimate.
But, and Senator, I've been frustrated with this for years, and I think the biggest piece here is that we have our honest people that are selling stuff are the ones that are getting the shaft, and so it's up to us to make sure that everything's fair.
But the bad guys and gals, yeah. Okay. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Continue.
The last piece of our initiative is related to two of the governor's tax provisions that have administrative costs of implementation and therefore are contained in our operating budget. More information on those can be found in the tax policy proposals in the governor's budget. The funds utilized or will be used for changes to the integrated tax system and also costs to properly process returns associated with two of the provisions. In summary, these investments will maintain and enhance the ability to meet our mission of funding Minnesota's future. Continued commitment to funding a balanced approach will provide excellent service to customers while effectively and efficiently administering Minnesota's tax system. Thank you very much for this opportunity to present to you today, and we'll stand for questions.
Any questions? I have kind of the same general question that I had for MMB, and that's with this additional general fund increase that we're gonna increase our services. Are we gonna have some more FTEs? You mentioned 11. Just kind of give us a little rundown on that,
Mr. Chair. The initiatives, the new initiatives, the new FTEs, the stop the smuggling is a new 11 FTEs, and the $3 million enhancing and maintaining our services and it is an additional new 17 positions.
Okay.
So this total package is 28 positions.
Very good. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Commissioner, could you just explain kind of real quickly how you actually do the elimination of the smuggling? Or, I mean, what do you actually do? Do you stop cars and see if they've got cigarettes in them from Wisconsin, or is there a better way to? do it.
Senator Stumpf, I think you're thinking about them, the revenue guys. You used to go after the bootleggers. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, there might be better ways.
Commissioner Scarborough.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we'll have some enforcement personnel as a part of this package. We'll also have legal staff. We'll also have outreach and education to retailers and local law enforcement authorities. We've had this before where we've had a special investigations unit and our special taxes with our tobacco units. It will mirror that model of enforcement activity. So, yes, we will be working with our partners to stop the smuggling and do education and information.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Commissioner.
Can I add just one piece to that?
Oh, absolutely.
It would be similar to how we conduct audits today. It wouldn't be a situation where we would be flagging down vehicles and stopping them. It would be more audit related, where we would be going into retailers and taking a look at, you know, the products that retailers have there and making sure that they're appropriately stamped versus not stamped. It would also be taking a look at working with our partners over at Department of Public Safety as well. So it's similar to an audit. It's just a way for us to conduct an audit going into the retailer and taking a look at that. There is a licensing component to this as well, where we're looking at a statewide license. So it would be making sure that people are appropriately licensed, and if they aren't, that we're following up there as well.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Stone,
is the biggest problem with smuggling with retailers, or is it with individuals?
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Barley.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, we are seeing it happening in retail locations, as Assistant Commissioner Squirra mentioned. About 40% of the inspections that we do regularly at retail locations have resulted in seeing untaxed contraband product, as we would call it. So what we would like to do with this initiative is be able to work with retailers who are where we find it, or with retailers who are following the law. And really, this is fundamentally unfair to those retailers who are following the law. But they may be approached by a smuggler, someone trying to sell them untaxed product. And so we want to let them have a place to report that information, and we can follow up and we can follow the chain to get to those smugglers. So we won't be stopping cars at the border, but we do know that it is coming in large quantities from other states, and so we need to have both the ability to observe where that's happening and then investigate that and find those individuals. And so the revenue estimate that was mentioned does include what we think will be driving people to a legitimate market if we can squelch this smuggling that's happening.
Senator
Just sorry to take this time.
No, that's a good question.
It seems like you know, part of the responsibility for the increased smuggling rests on our shoulders, I think, when we increase the tax to a point where, you know, it becomes very lucrative. I mean, you can go to another state very close by and save, you know, literally hundreds and hundreds of dollars. But and I understand the auditing process, and I think that's good. but it doesn't really get at the individual user primarily. And I think there's way more smuggling going on at the individual user than there is at the retail level. You know, and I'm not sure what the exact answer is there, but. But it is, when you look at, one thing that might be helpful would be as if our Department of Revenue would establish a very good relationship with the neighboring states like Wisconsin and North and South Dakota, and be able to maybe exchange some information. And I don't know if that occurs or not, but I think that is one way to at least know what's happening. I think in North Dakota, they were saying that some of their total sales had increased by several 100%. I mean, it was just multiples. They couldn't even handle it all. And I don't know if there's a good way to stop individual smuggling, but it might reflect back in some policy change for us that we would say, yeah, maybe we went overboard in terms of where we set that tax. We've created a situation where I'm just giving you a scenario, where the public won't live under the law in a legal fashion, and generally laws are not, if the law is so far out of the realm of acceptability to the public, you're not going to get it obeyed no matter what you do. You can't hire enough law enforcement people. So I think we need that information as well as you do, and hopefully at some point we can hear a report back from the department saying, yeah, you know, North Dakota's tax is 20 cents on a pack, or I don't know, but in Minnesota's is, you know, $2. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it would be beneficial if Minnesota lowered ours a little bit. It certainly would help the convenience stores and all of the Minnesota retailers because they have lost that business, basically. So that's just a thought. Thank you.
Senator Klassen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You might have mentioned this, but I was doing some reading. The return on investment for that $2.457 million, what do we expect as far as a return on investment is one question. And then secondly, these packages or cartons of cigarettes that we are finding illegal, are they stamped with other state tobacco stamps on them, or are these unstamped?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Klassen, I'll answer your second question first. Some of the product that is coming in is other tobacco product, which doesn't actually carry a stamp. To the extent that we see cigarettes, it is not. It varies a little bit by the seizure, but it is generally not stamped at all. So it's not reflective of necessarily another state's stamp. And of course, in Minnesota, you are required to have a Minnesota stamp to be legally selling it. Your first question about sort of the net of this, so it's 2.45. It's about 1.1 million a year, 2.4 over the biennium, and we would expect to return about double of that to the state in general funds. And Mr. Squirrel would have the specific number.
Okay. Thank you,
Senator Carlson. Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chair. A follow up on that. I'm looking at your page 10 of the budget change item 3 on there, where it talks about instituting penalties for noncompliance. And it said that currently there are no civil penalties for retailers found to be stocking or selling untaxed cigarette or tobacco. Is that part of what you're planning to change here? And is that an administrative, or do you require a statutory change? And is that a built-in problem with investigation if there's no penalty today?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, one of the things we wanted to do here was try to bring this kind of tax in line with other taxes. As you know, there are civil penalties for other tax as well as criminal penalties if the instance is severe enough. And so that is one of the things that we wanted to do in this space. The policy decision that was made to raise the rate was aimed at a couple of things. One was revenue, and one was to try to reduce the health effects of smoking. And this proposal is aimed at putting some additional teeth into that because we know that the incentive will be there if the money is there. This is a business. We understand that. And so if tax evasion becomes cheap enough, people will engage in it. So this is an attempt to try to bring a comprehensive approach to the problem that we're seeing.
Senator.
You said the word that I was looking for, tax evasion. So there are penalties for tax evasion, but aren't they criminal also?
They can be, yes.
Other questions? Okay. Mr. Squire, everybody done? Any other questions? Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next, we have Doreen Frost. Welcome, Director Frost. You're going to present to us the Board of Accountancy as well as the Board of Architecture, Engineering, Land Surveying, Land Architect, Geoscience, and Interior Design. Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Chairman. Members of the committee, thank you for the time to present. I do have two standalone agencies. I am 0.5 to each agency. If you would first let me talk about the Board of Accountancy. The Board of Accountancy, currently licensed in the last biennium, and you'll see on our small agency profile, over 12,000 individual licensees and almost 4,000 firms. What's been interesting in the last couple of years is our increase in the need for enforcement. The types of cases that this board has seen have definitely gone up as far as significance, as far as diverting of funds, theft by CPAs, those sorts of things. So we do have a very small staff. We have a staff of 6.5, like I said. Two of those are dedicated to enforcement. One of the things that we will be bringing back before this committee and to the legislative body this legislative session is a bill that has been carried with the support of the society. One is to change the attest language to bring it in conformity with the changes to the Uniform Accountancy Act, and also to come for the first time in over 30 years and ask for an increase in the civil penalty that the licensing board has for violations. We currently have a $2,000 maximum per occurrence, and we are requesting with some legislative changes, if we get the support, to have a $5,000 per violation maximum. So we will be bringing that piece of legislation back before this body. The only change item we have for the Board of Accountancy currently is in the governor's budget, and that is a 1.8% directly relating to compensation for the staff to offset the salary increases, insurances, those types of things.
Questions from Ms. Frost? All right, onward. We're going to talk about the other group that you represent.
Chairman and members of the committee, again, my name is Doreen Frost. It's my pleasure to talk about the board that I've been with since 1996. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Architecture, Engineering, Land Surveying, Landscape Architecture, Geoscience, which is actually professional geologists and professional soil scientists, and certified interior designers. For the certified interior designers, we do not regulate their practice. We regulate their title. It's a title-only act. This will be very brief. We also have a very small change item. For that board, we have almost 20,000, currently 20,000 licensees. We have a smaller number of actual complaints that come in on a biennial basis. In the last biennial basis, we had 159 new complaints. Chairman and members of the committee, the only change item we have is in the governor's proposal for the 1.8, again, the compensation package to offset the costs related to increased contracts, insurance, those same things. And again, it's a staff of 6.5 with me serving 0.5 to that agency.
Questions for Ms. Frost on the Board of Architecture at all? Good. Thank you. Thank you for your attention. All right. Next, we have the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And with us today is the Legislative Auditor, Jim Nobles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the Legislative Auditor. And, Mr. Chairman, it is a little bit embarrassing for an auditor to be in line asking for more money, but it is the first time I've ever done it since I became
legislator. It's the first time for everything, isn't it?
Yes, sadly so, Mr. Chairman. And but it results from kind of a strategic meeting that we had of the Legislative Audit Commission, which appoints the Legislative Auditor, and I work with the bipartisan commission of the legislature. And we really had a thinking session about our situation with added responsibilities and having lost some years ago 20 positions and never reclaimed them, that maybe it was time to try to ask for a little bit more. But, Mr. Chairman, I must say, as one who is a staff to the legislature, I realize at the end of the session you're going to get a target, and you're going to have a lot more requests for money than you have available. So do the best you can for us. We will appreciate it very much. Our request is in the document that you have, and it did come as a result of this meeting of the Legislative Audit Commission on November the 12th last year. Just to go through that very quickly, the change item request is for an additional $500,000 each fiscal year, which would be an 8% increase over the base for us. There is also a request by the Legislative Audit Commission that you appropriate the money directly to the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And the reason for that, Mr. Chairman, is that the Commission felt that it would increase transparency, participation, frankly, by the Legislative Auditor and the Legislative Audit Commission in our budgeting. We traditionally, in the last several biennia, have been incorporated into the budget that you appropriate for the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and then we get an allocation from that. Actually, some years ago, we did get a direct appropriation, and so the Legislative Audit Commission is asking that you go back to that previous practice. So why do we need this additional funding? Well, it is largely the result of the fact that we do have some added responsibilities. The creation of MNsure, for example, MNsure is under our jurisdiction. And I might just remind you of the fact that the legislative auditor is the auditor of state government. Everything in the executive branch, judicial branch, and a number of metropolitan agencies are under our jurisdiction. And so our responsibilities are quite large, and in recent years have grown even larger with the addition of MNsure, the four legacy funds that were created by the legacy amendment come under our responsibility and jurisdiction. And then in the last legislative session, you added a responsibility for the legislative auditor to conduct IT security audits. And so we would like to have some additional support for those activities. I might add, Mr. Chairman, that because some of those activities are funded by dedicated funds, there is money from dedicated funds that is recouped back into the general fund because of our work. There's about $1 million that then the legacy funds, the trunk highway funds, the game and fish funds, the federal funds pay back into the general fund because of the work we do. So, in addition to doing this work for these new responsibilities, we would like to increase the frequency of our ability to do compliance audits at state agencies in particular. And we would like, within that additional money, a pool that we would be able to use for staff salary adjustments. We have a very high staff turnover. We recently, for example, lost essentially our entire IT security audit team. They were hired away from us by another firm. And I don't think it was just totally salary. Compensation is always a factor. But I think that team was so small, it was only three people, that they really felt they weren't able to have enough impact fulfilling the new responsibility for IT security audit. So one of the things we would like to do if we get additional funding is to increase that team probably by one. We would also like to have a dedicated auditor that tracks and follows the legacy money. So those are the things that we want to do with that additional funding. But, Mr. Chairman, I really want to emphasize that before we came to this point of asking for this change item, we did a number of things to try and meet this challenge by being more efficient. So we did cut the hours that we put into auditing the state's annual financial statement by 25% to 30%. We also completely eliminated or reduced our audit presence at certain organizations. We used to do a significant amount of auditing at MNsku. We essentially don't do that audit work anymore. We do not do much audit work at all at the University of Minnesota anymore. We also do not audit the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and we used to. We dropped the audit of the Mosquito Control Commission. We dropped our audit presence at the Housing Finance Agency, and we dropped our audit at the State Fair. And we did those things because, again, we wanted to really be strategic in the use of our resources and focus on the things that we think are the most important issues to the legislature and in need of accountability and oversight. Finally, Mr. Chairman, I would just reference you to the last slide, which shows how we spend our money. We are a very staff-intensive organization. 90% of our funding goes to staff. One thing that is a little bit different for our office that is different from some of the other legislative staff offices that you're familiar with, we pay rent. As you know, there is an appropriation for rent in this building and in the state office building that covers all the legislature. We are in the Centennial Building. We occupy space there, and we pay $250,000 a year in rent for the space that we occupy. And then you can see what our other expenses are. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Questions for Mr. Nobles? Yes. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to, it's not a question, but I wanted to acknowledge some of the work that the state auditor has been doing in the last few years. I think that we've run into reviews that are quite complex of organizations that are quite big, and they have been doing an amazing job of reviewing some of the most challenging questions we have. And because of the nature of the work that we do, we don't have the time to, you know, really dive into doing some of those reviews. So I just wanted to acknowledge that and thank you for the work that you're doing. It's quite significant, and it is helping us do our work and just really address some very challenging issues we have with some of our organizations as they get bigger and more complex.
Thank you, Senator. And I must say, too, that one of the reasons I find this job so satisfying and interesting and challenging is that it can be of service to the legislature and take on some of these issues that I know are of such importance to you. And so we certainly appreciate being able to work in the positions that we do. So thank you.
Senator Klass.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had mentioned efficiency measures, and one of those, you've reduced some of your audit responsibilities. I'd be interested in who is conducting those audits, and have we ever done a cost analysis as far as keeping them inside? I'm assuming maybe we're using outside vendors. So, thank
Mr.
You.
Chairman, Senator Clausen. Yes, thank you for that question, because I think it's important for you to know that there is audit work that is done there. But we dropped those audits because we felt they could be done by an outside firm, because those audits were principally financial statement audits, which are important, but we still retain jurisdiction, even though the State Fair Minsku can get now from a CPA firm an audit of their financial statements. We still have jurisdiction to go in if there are any allegations of impropriety or any ad hoc need for us to do a review. So on the cost-benefit assessment, you know, I think that's hard to make. Our per-hour rate is significantly lower than a private firm. But when we do audit work, particularly for compliance audit work, which involves looking at whether or not organizations are complying with the laws that you pass, we would probably tend to spend some more hours than a CPA firm would, just because digging deep into those organizations sometimes takes more hours. So again, we felt comfortable for a variety of reasons, dropping some of this work. Some of these organizations also, I might add, have quite strong internal audit organizations, all staffed by former OLA employees, I might add. For example, at MIMSCU, at the Airports Commission, and other places. And so we have confidence that there is good, strong accountability in those organizations, both from external audit and internal audit. I actually proposed two sessions ago that we consider dropping our audit of the state's financial statements, and that could be hired out to a CPA firm. The Commissioner of Management and Budget at the time, Jim Showalter, strongly objected to that. He felt like it was better, for a variety of reasons, that that audit be conducted by a state official, the legislative auditor. And so I dropped that. But it's always under consideration in terms, Senator Clausen, of the cost benefit of that effort.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Other questions? Mr. Nobles, thanks for your service. And,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And thanks for your concise report. We'll be talking to you later.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Next, we have the Minnesota Historical Society. Dave Keller, Director of Public Policy, and Peggy Ingerson, CFO. Welcome to you both. Whoever wants to...
I'll get it started.
Say their name in the for the record and can take off.
Mr. Chair, I'm David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society.
Peggy Ingerson, Chief Financial Officer for the Minnesota Historical Society. Good afternoon.
Mr. Chair, we wanted to quickly mention that we send greetings from our director, Steve Elliott, who is not able to be with us today, but he sends his regrets. We just wanted to make a quick pass through, a quick overview of who we are and what we do before we mention the change item that was in the governor's budget. And, Mr. Chair, I know that most of you are familiar with the work that we do. We're one of the oldest educational organizations in the state, having been founded by the territorial legislature in 1849. Today, we're a statewide organization. We're involved in a wide range of activities, ranging from historic sites to the History Center Museum and Library, where visitors can learn about their own family's past, experience public programs. We publish, we do archaeology, we do historic preservation, and everything in between. We serve nearly 1 million people each year in person, and we serve 2.5 million unique users on our web pages each year. Mr. Chair, we have done our part for supporting the paper industry of Minnesota, so you have a folder of stuff that goes into a lot of detail with the work that we do with some pictures taking you around the state, so we won't spend a lot of time going through that, but within that folder is our annual report, which contains audited financial information, as well as a number of other items that demonstrate our strategic priorities, so we have a sense of where we're going. We also want to express our appreciation, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the support that you and this committee have provided in recent years for educational initiatives, which are the core of our work, and support for our staff, who are also the heart and soul of the organization and the work that we do. So we appreciate that support. The state funding is a base of support that allows us to leverage other resources to provide a stronger history program to more people across the state.
With that,
thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I will just highlight briefly, this wouldn't be a surprise to you, but we received also the governor's recommendation for 1.8% of general fund for the compensation cost for the organization. We have roughly just over 400 FTEs in the organization. Around half of our employees are funded with state general funds, and this will allow us to maintain services at the level that we currently provide. And we experience the salary cost pressures as well as other inflationary cost pressures, and that's the governor's recommended budget. It's $241,000 in fiscal 16, $487,000 in fiscal 17, for a total of
$728,000. 1.8. That's the magic number, yeah. Good. Is there any questions for the Historical Society? That's pretty clean cut. Thanks.
Thanks
for coming. We'll see you again, I'm sure. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much.
You bet. And last, but not least, the Indian Affairs Council, Anne Marie Hill, Executive Director of the Indian Affairs Council, and Jim Jones, Cultural Resources Director. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Anna Marie Hill, and I'm the Executive Director of Indian Affairs Council.
Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the committee. Jim Jones, Cultural Resource Director, Indian Affairs Council.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly before I talk a little bit about the governor's recommendation, Indian Affairs Council is one of the oldest and the most unique council in the nation, serving 59,000 approximately American Indians statewide, those that reside in urban and in rural and in tribal nations. We serve primarily as a liaison between the government, state government, and between the 11 sovereign nations of the state of Minnesota. We have a very large Church Board. We have a 28-member board consisting of commissioners. 11 tribal leaders have a seat on the board. Four state legislators and a member from the governor's office. Currently, we have four staff in the office. Myself as executive director. I also employ a legislative assistant who also does the work of the executive assistant and currently is overseeing our legacy funds that we have, Dakota Ojibwe language grant program, and also overseeing our Why Treaties Matter exhibit that still travels the state, although is not funded under the legacy grants. I also employ a cultural resources specialist and a cultural resources director. Approximately half of my budget goes for the work of the Cultural Resources Department within Indian Affairs Council, which is under a different statute, which is 30708, but a mandate that we handle repatriations, and Jim Jones will talk briefly about that. About the 1.8% increase, we appreciate any increase that we can get. Currently, we are all doing many different duties within the office to maintain the programs that we have. But the 1.8% increase is just to provide for the increase of operations and for funding for staff and for salary. Each year we have to budget a certain amount more. And as costs go up, I have to make cuts in other areas, such as for rent and for expenses, for traveling. Fortunately, we haven't had to do that because we travel statewide. I also have another individual that works within Indian Affairs Council that I employ, and she's funded each year from a federal fund that comes from the Department of Human Services Office of Economic Opportunity, and this grant program has been in place since about the early 1980s. Ordinarily, we've received about $40,000 a year to employ a full-time staff, and that has not been enough to even cover salary and other expenses for this individual, and certainly not travel. But this past year, we did receive another $40,000 to do that work, so that helps. However, I still have to cut into the general fund budget to keep this staff person on board. Fortunately, Indian Affairs has not experienced very much turnover in the past 9 years that I've been as the executive director. We had our first turnover approximately 3 years ago. But what that meant also is it was harder and harder to do business with Indian Affairs because each year we have to plan for the increases in salary and they can become substantial. But now especially insurance costs have increased substantially too. So with that, we did have some staff turnover and we chose to double up some duties so we can do the work of Indian Affairs. We appreciate any increase. It will help significantly. One of the areas is our cultural resources. Those costs, I set aside costs to contract, and Jim Jones will speak briefly about that. And I set aside approximately $30,000 to $50,000 each year for unanticipated costs for cultural resources work, and Jim will talk about that. But so this increase will also help with unanticipated costs in Indian Affairs Council that we have to address.
Mr. Jones.
Chairman, members of the committee, what he refers to as part of the unanticipated costs are under state statute 307.08, the Private Cemeteries Act. When human remains are inadvertently discovered on a construction project, once they're determined American Indian, under state law, Minnesota Indian Affairs Council takes control of the site. And under that statute, it's spelled out, average cost for recovery shall be borne by the state. So once the human remains are identified as American Indian, then my office takes control of what happens with the remains, and working with landowners, contractors, developers, city and county officials, and even other state agencies determine what happens in those cases. If it's a private landowner, like the case we had this fall, we actually had two cases that happened at the same time on the same day. We had an inadvertent discovery up in Pine City up in Pine County, and then we had a discovery over in Hennepin County. Both those projects involved multiple individuals being unearthed and disturbed. The Pine City individuals were historic coffin burials, and so there was a tremendous cost to the agency for the recovery of those remains that had to be borne by our office to recover those remains once they were determined not to be a homicide victim or a missing person case. So those are the kinds of cases that we have to deal with under state statute, and those are things that my office deals with. Going back to the Hennepin County one, that one is still pending until this spring, and we have, that is going to be a large one. That is multiple individuals, because you have like 7 mounds that were impacted by construction, and that is currently on hold. So we will be meeting with county officials, tribal officials, and working out a mitigation plan on what do we do next on that case. 2 years prior to that, we didn't have any. 2 years before that, we had 2 or 3. We still receive remains that come to and get turned over to Indian Affairs Council under state law. And then once that happens, that triggers a NAGPRA law, the federal law, and that's the Native American Graves Protection Repatriation Act. So the funding increase is very going to be needed, but it keeps us going as part of our responsibilities over and above what 3922 statute says. I'll be happy to answer any questions. And
questions for either Ms. Hill or Mr. Jones? Good. Go ahead, Senator Torres-Rae.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make sure that I leave this on record for the committee. I have requested from the council a response to 5 questions that my office sent out, and the Indian Affairs Council is the only council that has not responded. The questions were related to the legislative auditor's report, and I have taken the 5 elements that the report outlined as concerns. In order to address those questions, I felt it was important that I request a copy of the budget of the Indian Affairs Council, because I know that the Indian Affairs Council receives funding from other sources that are just not listed in this particular, that are not under the jurisdiction of this committee. It is the opinion of people in American Indian communities that the council is moving in a direction where they are funding cultural projects with the funding that is provided under the jurisdiction of this committee. So the legislative auditor attempted to put some of that clarification. You know, they're being asked to do a lot with different sources, and now the public is confused as to what sources are funding what particular duties of the council. My attempt was to get a clarification directly from you as the executive director so that I can explain, you know, how the future direction of the councils could continue. Mm-hmm. So if you need more funding in other areas to continue cultural programs that are not funded, that we assume that responsibility as a state so that you can do legislative work here. You just described the job of your executive assistant who has not been here doing cultural work and other projects that are not related to the funding here. So my intent is to clarify some of mm-hmm. that, because I know that you're doing a lot of work in mm-hmm. different directions, and we need to figure out, you know, how we can support you with that work so you can integrate your policy work into the work that you do. You invited me to attend a meeting on Thursday, March 5th. You sent instead of sending me responses to my questions, you say that I should attend a meeting, your quarterly meeting, because you cannot respond without your board, and that I should be there on March 5th. At 10 a.m., which is the I meet here. You know, I am in session right mm-hmm. now. So I am quite disappointed, and I want to leave that on the record, Mr. Chair. I am not ready to support the funding of the councils without new directions that truly address the the concerns that have been brought to our attention for 2 years, and 4 years for me from community advocates and leaders who believe that we should not continue to fund the councils unless we have a clearer direction. And I am not going to ignore that. I am not going to continue to pretend that we don't know what is happening, but continue to support the funding. So I want to leave that on the record for this meeting today, that I have not received the responses that I need from the councils in order to do my work as a policy chair in my committee, and I cannot in good faith recommend that we continue to fund these organizations without new direction.
Okay. Ms. Hill?
Yes.
You will have those responses?
Yes.
To Senator Torres-Ray?
The question was if I could provide opportunity for the tribal leaders to, or members of the board, which I mandated to do, to discuss any of these issues forward. So I was just following the duties of what I'm supposed to do, is discuss this with the board, which is perfectly fine. I can certainly get those questions for her.
We need the answers.
I mean the answers for her. I can certainly do that.
All right.
I prefer following what I'm obligated to do is abide
well,
by
I'm sure
my
you
role
do,
under
we
the,
need those yeah. answers.
Yeah. So also we have all of them available, the budget, everything, how we're spending and so on. So we will.
All right.
So absolutely.
Mr. Chair,
absolutely.
I just want to make a clear clearly I don't want you to share with us information that is not already public. You do not need to consult with your board when we ask for your itemized budget for money that the state provides to the council. You don't need permission. That is public information, actually.
Yeah, all of it is public information. Everything that we do is public information. Absolutely.
Okay. Very good. We'll look forward to hearing from you, as will Senator Torres-Ray. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, members, we're going to meet both next Monday and Wednesday. And Monday we're going to work to finish the rest of these budget presentations. We won't get through all of them, and we're still working on Wednesday. So thank you for your attention, and we'll adjourn till Monday. So then,